Good morning, everybody. You are listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High in studio with you this morning. And in studio with us from the K-State Extension offices, we have James Coover and Barbara Ames. Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Good morning. Doing great this morning.
Yeah. Hey, feels great out there this morning. It does. 55 degrees.
It's like spring out there this morning.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, I think that's actually the high today. Yeah. It's going to get cold after that. but it's been really nice out there this morning. I walked outside. I was like, what is this? Is this spring? What's going on here?
I told James on the way in, we need to enjoy this final day of that for a while.
Well, yeah. The weather's just been up and down. I mean, we had snow last weekend, and now we have basically spring. So it's been interesting weather-wise.
Friday,
lots of things going on.
We had that all in one day, right?
Yeah. Basically, a 24-hour period, we went from fall to spring because, there were some thunderstorms and then winter.
That's right.
It's just like, what can you expect else in Kansas? So that's kind of what it does around here, and it does the same thing in Oklahoma, where I'm from as well. So you have all four seasons in one day. So today, it is amazing. So it's like, if you don't like the weather, just wait a few minutes, it'll change. So a lot of things going on with you guys, and James, we'll go ahead and start with you. And a few things you wanted to talk about was I have a wheat program coming up.
Yeah, and so on December the 31st, we're going to have Dr. Romolo Lotto, who's the wheat specialist from K-State, will be coming down to the southeast. First, he's going to stop in Columbus at 8:30, and he's going to talk a little bit about soft versus hard wheat. It's kind of a different animal, really, soft versus red, and we're sort of transitioning over to the other varieties, and we're kind of looking at the possibility of that. Soft wheat kind of does better with our wet winters. Usually the market is a little bit different, but recently it's actually been a fairly okay deal to get into. And so we're going to kind of look at that. Also, Dr. Gretchen, she'll be coming in, and she's going to be talking a little bit about, if we're not growing wheat, what are we going to grow? After that, Dale Helwig, who's the agent out of Columbus, he's going to be talking a little bit about the farm bill, and so ARC versus PLC. That'll be in Columbus at 8:30, and then we're going to have an exact duplicate of that program at 1:30 in Girard. And that'll be on December the 31st.
Okay, so...
January 31st. Yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say, that'll be a long way off.
Yeah.
That's a lot of front selling there.
Yeah.
So again, lots of wheat programs going on. Something else you want to talk about was wheat and soil sampling.
Yeah, and so, with this wheat this kind of year, kind of go along with this program, really I want to talk a little bit about wheat in the state of Kansas. And as you know, we're the breadbasket of the U.S. However, recently, we've been decreasing in that number and decreasing in that name, too. North Dakota hasn't taken us yet with that name, but they're getting closer as we're getting farther away. Wheat yields have been decreasing. I mean, the actual yields per acre for wheat has been increasing, but total production has actually been decreasing because we're planting a whole lot less acreage. There's a good reason for this too, is because the money isn't there like it used to be. Wheat prices haven't really changed much since the 70s and the 80s. And if you consider inflation and all of that.
Yeah, it might as well be decreasing.
Yes.
I mean, even if it's holding steady with inflation, that might as well be a decrease pretty much.
I mean, if less than half of what it was, and especially when you start to put in the cost of inputs, fertilizer, herbicide, everything has been increasing. All the cost of growing wheat has been increasing considerably, but the prices haven't. So they say generally it's almost a wash just planting wheat. I mean, you almost get what you put into it.
Right.
And so it's really hard to justify growing it and spending that time doing something that you're just kind of doing for fun.
Yeah, because you're not getting anything from it. I mean, like you say, it's just random. That's like saying, I'm going to spend $100 on this, but I'm getting $100 back. What was the point of it almost?
Yes, so. Yeah. And so really a lot of guys still plant wheat, A, out of tradition, and B, because you're already paying for that equipment, you're already paying for that ground. you know, some other things, parts to it, it kind of at least helps get that dual income if you're a wheat soybean double cropper. So there are some financial reasons to it. It's just not a whole lot of financial reasons to it. And so for the most part, wheat has kind of become a cover crop, which is good. I mean, we need to have something there protecting the ground. But, you know, in 1997 is when we actually had the biggest total production in Kansas, and that was at 500 million bushels. For the last past few years, we've gotten around 350 million. And that's despite the fact that we've been growing more per acre, mostly because of better genetics, actually, is why we've been growing more. And so... This year, we don't know for certain yet what the acres planted yet, but it'll most likely be the least amount of wheat that we've planted for a very long time. And I'm talking like 70, 80, maybe 100 years. I mean, a very low number, largely because of the wet fall. It was hard to get that wheat in, and then farmers like, might as well give up. It's not really worth a whole lot anyway.
Right.
And so that's sort of what happened to it. And there's a reason for the markets for wheat not being as good as other commodities, even though the other commodities aren't super great right now either. But because wheat is a very proliferated market. Russia actually exports more wheat than we do. And the European Union, collectively, they export pretty close or almost more than we do as well. And so we really aren't the big name in the wheat market like we are with the other commodities. And as for who we sell to, that's another thing, is that we sell to a great number of countries. For us, mostly Mexico, because they're right across the border.
Right.
But a lot of the Asian markets, a lot of the African markets, and so our wheat goes all over the place. And so does Russia's, and so does the European Union's. It's kind of odd. Actually, China and India produce the most wheat in the world.
Wow.
You really wouldn't think about those countries producing the most.
No.
Except they don't export anything. Their populations are so huge that
it has to stay there.
It has to stay
there. Sustain their population, basically.
Exactly.
Since they got, like, what, over a billion people. So it's like they have to keep it there to sustain it. So.
Yeah. They probably, I think, India even imports a little bit. I mean, even though they're the biggest producer, they actually still import some.
Oh, my goodness. So. I mean, and they're a humongous country as well, population-wise,
yes.
You know?
Yeah. And so, you know, for that market, in Kansas, we export about 50% of the wheat that we grow. We're the biggest exporting state for wheat as well, you know, being the biggest producer. So it really is a big part of our Kansas fabric. But without wheat, even if we get rid of it, there are some reasons to keep it around. First of all, is erosion control. It really does act as a cover crop because, you know, despite this odd storm that we had, you know, last Friday, usually the big thunderstorms and heavy rain events, they'll happen in the spring, and that's when the wheat is up there growing and can protect the soil. And so the soil erosion doesn't happen consistently throughout the year. The vast majority of soil erosion happens with just two or three events. I mean, sometimes it's just one event during a year that takes most of the erosion for that year. And so, you know, having the soil protected at that specific point is the most important time to protect it. And then also, you know, like I talked about before, it's the double income that we're kind of looking at for the cover crops. If you're not growing wheat, there are some other things you can grow, which is a cover crop.
Right.
And the only financial way to make money off a cover crop is if you involve cattle at some point. You know, cover crops, if you're not selling some sort of grain, you got to do something with it. And so wheat can actually act as a cover crop. If you don't sell the grain, it can act as a cover crop. You know, a lot of people that are kind of diversifying their operation, whether they're using wheat as silage, you can balage or haylage. There's a lot of stuff that you can do with a cover crop that we don't commonly do around here, but maybe farmers can start to look at it and seeing what sort of benefit they can get from just growing something during the winter, which is really the kind of the goal. Alfalfa is actually another crop that we can consider to be a replacement of wheat. Even though alfalfa, you know, you plant it once, it lasts for 4 or 5 years, still, it's kind of a winter growing sort of thing where you have it into kind of into the fall and it and greens up fairly early in the spring, and it protects the soil, I mean, always, because it's always there.
Right.
And so it's sort of a side product that we don't actually get grain off of, but it is a commodity that we can sell. So it actually fairly fits pretty well within the grain rotation and as a replacement for wheat.
So, again, like you said, wheat can kind of be used like a cover crop to keep that soil protected, because if you get lots of rain, that like we did this past year, this was crazy. I wasn't here for that, but I mean, it was in Oklahoma because we were getting it in Oklahoma too. Does that not damage the soil if there's just too much rain like that?
Yeah, there was a lot of erosion just this last year. And I mean, you know, it takes about 100 years to replace 1 inch of soil
by
natural, and that can be lost with literally within 1 year.
Man.
And so, I mean, years like last year with unprotected soil, I'm talking hundreds of years of soil damage.
Man, that's incredible.
Yeah, it's really a hard world when you really start to put the numbers together.
Yeah, last year was just a freak year with just so much rain. I know the verdigris like went over its banks, and I'd heard of that. It wrecked a lot of farmers that I just mm-hmm. destroyed their farms because it's nice to have some rain to kind of help water, but man, not that much.
That's
and destroyed equipment. And it's just last year, I could not believe last year. So, you want to have that wheat at the very least to be a good cover crop to protect that soil just in case. You know, you have another freak year again.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Barbara, you have a few programs you wanted to talk about, and one of them is the Stay Strong program.
That's right. We have scheduled the first Stay Strong, Stay Healthy class for the year. In case you're not familiar with Stay Strong, Stay Healthy, it's an evidence-based strength training program. It's designed for older adults, and it's an 8-week program where we meet twice a week. So we have 16 exercise classes, and they meet for an hour twice a week. The goal of the program is to improve people's health and quality of life. And when you come to class, what you're going to do is there are warm-up exercises, and then we have 8 strengthening exercises that we do each time. And we start out without weights, but then we'll add weights, and we'll use those throughout the class. And then we'll have some cool-down stretches. So it just helps improve people's strength and balance and flexibility. The series of classes is going to start February the 4th, and it runs basically on Tuesdays and Thursdays through March the 26th. So if you're interested, we need registration by Tuesday, January the 28th, and there is a $20 registration fee, and we do provide the weights during the class.
Okay.
And of course, we encourage people to go ahead and do strength training one other time during the week. And so if you want to have your own weights at home, that's great too.
And how are you able to register? Do you just call, or can you register online? Or
For this class, you call our office. The number is 620-331-2690. To get more information or to register for the class.
And it's going to be where at again?
It's going to be in Independence at our Independence office. That's at 410 Peter Pan Road in Independence.
Okay, so not too far off, especially if you're in the Coffeyville and obviously the Independence area. So
right.
Montgomery County in general. It's not
that
far.
Right.
It's pretty centralized. So that is going to be on February 4th, but you need to register by January, you said?
January the 28th.
Okay, so basically about a week before that happens. So again,
right.
yeah, actually it is exactly a week before. I was sitting there looking at the calendar,
right.
Make sure I was reading. So about a week before. So, and that'll be really good. That's maybe something I need to look into with my knees and my horrible balance. So
right. It helps keep our mind and our body functioning at their best, and just helps us to build muscle and increase bone density, and helps with osteoporosis, prevent osteoporosis and stuff like that. So a lot of good reasons to do strength training.
Absolutely. Just like you said, my mother has osteoporosis. So if she lived here, that'd probably be a good program for her, because
right.
she has trouble walking right now. So it would help her out a little bit. Just, I mean, to sit
do a few strength exercises here and there, you know?
And a neat thing about it is we do assessments before the class and then after the class. And we have a chart that we fill out, and you can actually see the improvement. And we've done this class for, I don't know, 4 years maybe now, and we've seen great improvement in
people.
That's
awesome.
And we have it on paper because we do those assessments and just track people's improvement. It's been a class that has really helped a lot of people get stronger and be healthier.
That's awesome. That sounds like a great program. Okay, what we're going to do, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll come back to you, Barbara. You said you have a few more programs you want to look at here, so we'll do that after the break. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Welcome back to the Mighty 690 KGGF, and welcome back to Green Side Up. You can hear it every Wednesday here, and today we have Barbara Ames and James Coover, the K-State Extension, from the K-State Extension offices, and welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Barbara, we're going to pick up where we left off, and you had a few programs you want to talk about. We started with the Stay Strong, Stay Healthy program. Now we can we're going to move on to Walk Kansas and also a few other programs you wanted to talk about.
First, let's talk a little bit about the Farmers Market Regional Workshops. Those are something that we started doing 4 or 5 years ago, and they're there to help support current and prospective farmers market vendors in the area. We do them all around Kansas, but the regional one this year is going to be in Iola at the Allen Community College at 1801 North Cottonwood in Iola. The registration is $20 for a participant, and that includes all the programs that you get to take advantage of that day, and it includes your lunch, and they need to register by January the 24th. The Farmers Market Workshop itself is on Saturday, February the 1st, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. And some of the topics they're going to be talking about are how to expand your market season, specialty crops and produce safety, how to grow in the winter, organic pest controls, how to make the most of a small acreage. There's going to be the Kansas Senior Farmers Market Nutrition Program Certified Farmer Training. And then also we have scale testing and things like that. So it really is worth taking some time to come to these farmers market workshops that we do. And so this year, again, it's Iola, Allen Community College, Saturday, February the 1st from 9 to 3.
That's the day before my birthday. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm a groundhog baby. So So everybody's always like, did you see your shadow? I'm like, yeah, have your 6 more weeks of winter.
All right. Well, to register, you can go to the website fromthelandofkansas.com, or if you want to call our office at 620-331-2690. If you can't remember that from the Land of Kansas website, well, give us a call and we can point you in the right direction to register online, or there are paper registrations for people that need that too. And
that sounds like a great program. So again, that is going to be on February 1st, and the day before my birthday, so February 1st at Allen Community College in Iola. So, and it's not a far drive, so get registered for that and head on up. You'll be able to learn a lot of things up there.
A lot of helpful information.
Absolutely. And then you also have Walk Kansas coming up as well.
Right. That's a little bit farther out, but just want to give people a heads up that Walk Kansas is coming March the 15th through May the 9th in 2020. And Walk Kansas is our 8-week healthy lifestyle challenge. I think that's been going on almost 15 to 20 years at this point. This year, it's going to be just a little bit different. We're going to be introducing the 9 shared lifestyle traits of the Blue Zones. Have you heard of the Blue Zones?
I have not heard of the Blue Zones.
All right. Well, the Blue Zones are places across the world where people live measurably longer and healthier lives. And so there are several places. There's one in the United States, but they're like in Italy and Japan and some different places, maybe around the Mediterranean Sea, where people typically live to be over 100 years old.
Wow.
And so they've done some study of that and come up with some of the traits that people, you know, the things that people do to live that long. And it's things like their diet and exercise, but also just living with a purpose and controlling stress in your life. surrounding yourself with family and support and things like that. So WAC Kansas is an 8-week program, and we're going to be talking about one of those traits each week, and also having some recipes and different things going along. But of course, WAC Kansas is mostly about walking. And so we are still going to be doing walking.
Exactly.
Walking, of course, along with that.
WAC Kansas, why? You get to walk on WAC Kansas. What a surprise.
That's right, yes. It is, like I said, an 8-week healthy lifestyle challenge. And the physical activity is the heart of the program. But in addition, we do have a newsletter that comes out each week. And, you know, the other things, like I was saying. It's going to be $10 a person to register and complete that program this year. And for that, you get an online tracker, physical activity tracker, weekly newsletter, program resources, local activities, and things like that. So just a heads up that WAC Kansas is coming, and we encourage people to participate and learn about the Blue Zones. I think that's going to be kind of interesting and exciting to have a little different twist this year.
Right. And where is that going to be located at?
Well, it's all over Wildcat District.
Okay.
It's actually all over the state of Kansas.
Okay, so it's not just in one particular location.
It's all over the district.
Okay.
Each one of our offices will be able to, you know, to help you out if you need some information or something. But you do register online.
So okay.
There'll be flyers and things coming out closer. You know, we'll start publicizing it more in February. So just a heads up, it's coming. And we hope to have a dedicated Facebook page this year for participants so that, you know, you can chat and ask questions. And, you know, if you want to go for a walk in your town and invite others to come, while you'll have that Facebook page to do that. So
yeah, that'd be cool. Kind of have a group of people walking together. And that's always actually really cool to be able to walk with a group of people, because you can talk to each other while you're walking. And also, it's really cool to walk with a group of people.
That's
so
right.
Again, lots of great programs coming up here in the Wildcat District. And heading back to you, James, a few more things I want to talk about with you real quick. Well, the main thing, obviously, is soil testing.
Yeah. So, before we talk about soil testing, I wanted to talk
You do have a few programs as well. I had that written down, and I don't know why I didn't talk about it. So,
these are my fellow agents. These are Wendy's and Adavin's programs. But we have a laming and kitting workshop, and that will be on February the 10th at the Southeast Research and Extension Center there in Parsons.
James, if you can get a little more in your mic there, you sound really far. Sound far away.
And so, if you have sheep or you have goats. You know, this laming and kitting workshop. I mean, last year we had a goat workshop that completely filled the Southeast Center. I mean,
wow.
Over 100 people. And so these were a really popular topics. And there's a lot more people with sheep and goats than what we realized, because it works really well with small acreage like we have here in the Southeast.
Right.
So they'll be on February the 10th at 6 p.m. at the Parsons Research Center. We also have a tame grass stalker field day. And so for the cattlemen out there, this will be on February the 20th at the Greenbush Education Center. And that'll be at 10 o'clock. This one, they're bringing in all kinds of big names. I'm looking at the flyer here, and it's got some real big names in the cattle industry. So we're kind of fortunate to bring something this close by. It's a whole bunch of districts, Southwind, Wildcat, and Cherokee coming together to bring this to this area. So don't want to miss that one on February the 20th.
Okay, so some great programs there. And you said Greenbush, and where's that located at?
Well, the Greenbush, it's in Crawford County. It's kind of by Girard.
Okay. That's where the observatory is, correct?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
That's where the observatory is. Yeah.
Okay. So I know where that's at now. So okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, again, you so some good programs there. The other thing you want to talk about this morning was soil testing.
Yes. Though. And so I want to talk about soil testing because it's kind of universal in a way. It doesn't matter if you're a crop producer, a cattleman. It doesn't matter whether you have a lawn or a garden. Soil testing can be done. If you have some soil, you can test it. And so I want to talk a little bit of it. And now's a pretty good time of the year to do some soil testing. It's just really you can test soil anytime during the year, but we're a couple months away from the growing season. And so to get that in and get it tested, get some recommendations. But I wanted to talk a little bit about how to take a proper soil test. Because often fairly often into the office, we'll get a soil sample that I knew wasn't quite taken accurately. And then the results aren't going to be very accurate as well. And so taking the soil test properly is probably the biggest component when it comes to getting an accurate soil test. And then with the recommendations, without an accurate soil test, it's very hard to be accurate with them as well. And so there's two types of main variation when it comes to taking a soil test. One is the macro variation. With that, we're talking about the entire field or the entire lawn or garden or whatever it is that you're testing. By that, we need to go, when we're taking our soil cores, we need to be randomly throughout the entire area. It's not just go to the edge of the field with your four-wheeler and take it around the four-wheeler and send it off. If we do that, we'll only know what the soil results are in that one edge of the
right.
field. It needs to be random. Unless we're doing grid sampling, which is done in a completely different fashion. But I like to say, for the most part, you can only get to about 40 to 50 acres is the maximum size that one soil sample can represent. After that, if you have an 80-acre section, you should probably split that off into 2 to 4 different pieces. And you'll split it off based upon topography, whether the good yields versus bad yields. There's a number of ways to make your management zones. But just to make sure that you don't get too big with your one soil sample.
Basically, why is this getting good yields and this area is getting bad yields? So you kind of want to split that up, say, okay, what's going on over here that's good and what's going on over here that's bad? That way we can get both to be good. So.
Yes, yeah. Southeast Kansas is not a uniform place.
Right. It's an interesting place for sure.
It's a lot of very small fields that are very different. And so it really takes a lot more. It takes a lot of effort here in the Southeast
right.
to get everything and do some variable rate applications. The other type of variation is the micro variation. And that's the one that people have some trouble with. And it's universal no matter what you're testing. So it's true for gardeners as well. When we're doing some macro variation or when we're doing our soil testing, we need to take at least 7 cores per sample. Ideally, we need to take 10 to 15 cores per sample. And the reason is because only one core or only 3 cores, it's not enough material to actually give us a true result. If you only take one core, you only know what that one core is. There's no reliability to that. Another thing is to make sure that your soil test is 6 inches deep. And because all our recommendations, I mean, no matter what you're testing, are based upon that 6-inch sample. So if you get 8 inches, you're diluting out your sample. The recommendations are going to be overdone.
Yeah.
If you kind of scrape the surface and just throw it into a bag, nutrients are concentrated at the soil surface. So that way you're going to end up with a much higher recommendation or a much higher background nutrient, and your recommendations are going to be too low. So it's really important to get to that proper size. And 10 cores with the soil probe makes the perfect amount of soil. Two cups is about what we need to do any of the tests that you want to run. After you take that soil test, here's another important part, is to keep that soil test in the refrigerator. You can't leave that in your truck, can't leave it in your car or on the kitchen counter, because those microbes in there, they will continue to do what microbes do, and they'll end up messing up your soil test. And so they're not innocuous. Even though we're testing for things that are inorganic, we have to be careful. These are biological samples. Ideally speaking, we want to send those off to the soil testing lab on Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, so they're not sitting in the truck over the weekend. In the mail truck over the weekend.
Right.
And so, we just kind of have to get them there as quickly as possible. But after that, what soil tests that people need to take? I mean, the most base soil test, and it doesn't matter what you're sampling, we'll always want to take pH, phosphorus, and potassium. Those are the 3 main ones. After that, it kind of depends on what you're testing for. With soybeans, you probably want to throw zinc in there. With corn, you probably want to throw organic matter. for your nitrogen recommendation. And same thing with wheat as well, you know, to the three grass species, corn, wheat, and sorghum. You probably want to think about the mobile nutrients as well, chlorine, nitrogen, sulfur. Those you have to take with a separate soil test. You can't take those with the other ones because those are mobile nutrients. And with the gardens, you want to take those, the normal three, phosphorus, potassium, pH, but you want the organic matter in there as well, just so you can see how that's working in your garden. One of the odd ones that we should test for, but we often don't, is boron. We need very small amount of boron in our soil. But here in the Southeast, we have the oldest soil in the state. And actually, our native background soil doesn't have hardly any boron in it, like the rest of the state does.
Right.
And so, as of yet, we don't test for boron very often. But for the dozen or so tests that has gone into the extension office that I've seen, not a single one of them has tested for high enough boron yet.
Wow.
And so, and this is something that you'll apply maybe 2 pounds to an acre. And that will be all that farmer will ever need for that field, because it uses an incredibly small amount. We don't have a whole lot of research on boron. We don't actually know really what the yield response will be. And often co-ops don't even carry that boron. So it's something that we kind of need to look into. Maybe we can apply some of this stuff and see what the results are. But it's something that we don't really look into what we should. With gardens and lawns, you don't need to worry about boron. That's something for agricultural production.
So basically, it's still being researched, the effects of boron, pretty much. But otherwise, you want to have a little bit, but don't overdo it, obviously.
Yes. Boron, you can't even apply it with the seed, because it'll kill the seed.
Oh, wow.
And so it's an incredibly small amount over a very large area, and that's all it'll ever need.
Right.
But, you know, it's just one of those it's kind of an odd thing when it comes to this. So
yeah, still more research going into that. But again, don't go overboard with the boron. So, all right, guys. Well, I thank you very much for coming in today. Giving us a lot of great information, a lot of great programs going on around the Wildcat District. So I appreciate you guys coming in today.
Sure, thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right, we're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we'll start Open Line. You are listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Here is your Fox News.